On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the film Always Be My Maybe. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, but if you do listen without having seen the film, just be aware that some of the plot might be spoiled for you. Enjoy.
Hello.
Hey. I was calling you. Did it work or was it not working?
It wasn't actually ringing at my end.
Oh, I'm sorry. I also sent you a whole bunch of emojis or stickers. Stickers. Sorry. Key difference between stickers and emojis, which I totally know because I'm down with the children.
I see that you said rad.
Yep.
Rad is still one of the coolest words that someone can say.
I said rad and BFF and bay and lol and rad again and BRB, which means bird in internet language, you know, because they say burb instead of bird. It's like lots of things on the internet is they call something a thing, but it's just slightly mistyped, like pwn, PWN, one of those kind of things, because it's funny when things are mistyped, right?
The most important of them all is ol mao, which actually means lovely Mao and shows off the love for communism that is inherent to the internet.
Chairman Mao or Mao Zedong, to give him his full name.
Mm-hmm.
his full title.
Internet slang icon.
Yeah. Father of memes and communism.
How are you?
Yeah. I'm all right. Yeah, sorry I was late. It's because I was putting on my Juggalo makeup
to avoid security cameras.
Yeah, exactly. No facial recognition for the Juggalos, so I have decided to become a Juggalo. I apologize in advance to my friends and my family.
Do you want to know about how magnets work?
I don't.
I feel as though Juggalo is a strange fandom that I'll never quite understand. And for that reason, I don't really feel suitable mocking it. Given
no, because they might come for you.
Well, I don't think they'll come for me, but there's this strange community feeling to them that few bands ever really are able to create. I don't feel comfortable mocking the Juggalo when there's so many awful fandoms out there that seem to be inherently worse.
No, I'm not necessarily even mocking the Juggalo. I think it's good that they've managed to find a way around Face ID, because, you know, I'm not a fan of that. I'm just on the Wikipedia page now. It says not to be confused with Juggalo.
Juice Bigelow, European Juggalo.
Oh, do you reckon Rob Schneider would mock the Juggalos for sure, and then they'd come for him?
They would, and they would be fully deserving of it.
He'd definitely like do a film that was really offensive to them and then have to apologize for it.
Yes, exactly.
Now, here's the thing about the Juggalos, like at what point does a fandom become a subculture? Because I feel like this is an example of that, right?
Yeah, I definitely think so, where it's almost as though the insane clown posse being a fan of their music has almost transcended into something that's more than that, and it's more of this kind of subculture. Much like you have those different kinds of the punk scene that were spearheaded by individual bands that then become something much more than that.
Yeah. Like how, what was it, Lady Gaga calls her fans little monsters? Stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I think it's probably a level above the Lady Gaga fandom, isn't it? Because of the physical nature of like Juggalo meetups and things like that. It's almost as if it goes beyond just being a fan of their music and into something much more transcendent, as it were. You know, I think there's a bigger claim for a religion behind the Juggalos than there is behind Scientology, for instance, you know?
Well, yes, yeah. If only the Juggalos had all those like weird like centres in London where you could walk in and get free personality testing.
I want to see people out on the streets wanting to talk to me about being a Juggalo.
Yeah.
Wearing a really...
Do you have a moment to talk about Juggalo Christ?
Wearing a really smart suit just with the Juggalo makeup.
Yeah, I would stop and chat with them happily, as long as I wasn't on a schedule.
Insane Clown Posse, I know you're listening. You love our podcast.
They listen to this all the time because they're fans of Guy Fieri, and they saw the film Sensations, and they were like, "Yeah, I'm down with that."
That is a wonderful callback.
Because at this point in our chronology, Sensations has been released. A real unsuccessful film for 2019.
That is exactly right. Oh, by the way, you've seen it already, Paddy, but we had a little chat in the previous episode about a sequel to Beastly called The Best Witch Hunter.
We did. You have made some
and
artwork.
And I have made a potential poster for it. You know, you've got Vin Diesel and Mary-Kate Olsen. You know, can they?
And it's called The Best Witch Hunter.
The Best
Witch
Hunter,
which I think is a very good title.
Yeah, I think that's a great title. I think you've got two real good names there. You've got two established characters as well. It's a crossover event. Last Witch Hunter, it's Beastly.
The most ambitious crossover event in the history
the most ambitious crossover event in the history of the Olsons.
Yeah.
It's going to be something incredible. So be sure to check out that poster as well. Paddy, I give you permission to share it alongside this episode.
I will. I will tweet it when I tweet this episode out.
It's something beautiful. Something truly beautiful.
It's truly beautiful. You're very good at making this kind of artwork. I'm genuinely very, very sad that these films don't really exist.
Yeah, I'd love which of the movies? Because have we had four now? Is this number four?
Yeah, we've had Sensations. So all of these can be found on our SoundCloud page, by the way. The clips from which these films originate. Sensations is the first, and I think still the best. But there's also Jellystorm.
And yeah, Jellystorm.
Opposite Day.
Opposite Day, yeah, and then The Best Witch Hunter. So those are the four movies in the big boy cinematic universe.
Yeah, and now we need to think of some kind of crossover with those. Vin Diesel and Guy Fieri teaming up to save the world from killer baguettes.
Yeah, I could get behind that. The same energy that brought us the Jellystorm.
We then have the Terry Storm.
The Terry
Crews. Terry Crews gets into like some kind of mad scientist's lab and gets into a multiplier that just like then crashes. The computer crashes and it just keeps multiplying him over and over and over and over again. And it creates this huge force that's like a literal twister of Terry Crews's coming at you.
Would you rather fight one Terry Crews sized Terry Crews? This needs to happen. I think, you know, we've got four incredibly solid movies under our belt.
Yeah.
All of them have box office potential.
I just think we need to get the Juggalos involved.
Yeah, they you know, we get Insane Clown Posse doing the soundtrack. We make those we make the values of the Juggalo movement inherent in our movies. You know, the family togetherness. It worked for Fast and Furious. You know, the family dynamic of Fast and Furious is why people go back to watch it so much.
Yeah. We can have an annual festival.
We instill that into the big boy cinematic universe, and I think we're on to a winner.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, Insane Clown Posse, if you're listening, do we have a proposal for you?
Yeah, get on board. Get on board.
This is good. You know, we're not our genius is not recognized by Hollywood, but that doesn't mean that we're not legitimate filmmakers.
No, exactly. We may well have never made a film, but that doesn't mean we're not legitimate filmmakers.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Just because we don't have fancy cameras, just because, you know, you want me to trash your lights, yeah, Hollywood.
Oh dear. Good,
good old Christian Bale. Gotta love him.
You know what movie Christian Bale wasn't in?
Waterworld. That's what we're talking about this week, right?
Can we get away with talking about Waterworld? I really want to rewatch and talk about Waterworld at some point.
Yeah.
But is there enough romance? Probably.
There's a romance between a man and the ocean.
A romance between a fish man and the sea.
Not in a Hemingway way.
Romance between Dennis Hopper and crude oil.
Yep.
Those are two loves worth shouting about.
You feel it. I think we need to get more abstract on this podcast in terms of what we class as romance.
What is love?
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me on this here podcast.
So, one movie that is less abstract is Always Be My Maybe, which does not star Christian Bale.
It's not really abstract in any way, is it? It's pretty straight up.
It is a straightforward romantic comedy.
Yes, it is. It's one of these Netflix films that they have now. A Netflix original.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it is a solid rom-com, isn't it?
It is. I really enjoyed this film. What did you think?
I didn't really enjoy it, but I enjoyed it. And it felt very middle of the road in a way that I found very comforting. But I think that I don't want to get too social justice warrior all over this movie. Because I'm...
It's okay. I think Keanu Reeves would approve of you doing that.
I'm scared of...
He's very into social justice. I don't know if you know this.
I'm scared of upsetting the alt-right because they despise...
Oh, I thought you were going to say I'm scared of upsetting Keanu Reeves.
Well, I'm also scared of upsetting Keanu Reeves because he's been one of my faves for a very long time. And I think...
Keanu.
I think the... Uvavu. that was a Shooting Stars reference for any of you who love 90s comedy from Britain.
If you've never heard, maybe you grew up in America, you've never heard of Shooting Stars, just go on YouTube and search for Shooting Stars, The Dove from Above. You never had anyone come up to you and go, he's a baby, which I actually sing to my son sometimes.
Oh, that's
incredible. Because he is a baby.
Because he is literally a baby. That's amazing. where were we? Keanu Reeves is...
Something about Keanu.
Yeah, Keanu Reeves is great. And the fact that he's had this sort of resurgence...
he's Canadian.
...is really good because he was maligned unfairly for a while, whereas actually he can be an incredibly effective actor. And I think... Always Be My Maybe really proves that, where he's great in this. He's my favourite part of this movie. But what I was going to say was, it's nice that there is a standard middle-of-the-road rom-com that isn't about white people, that also doesn't make a big deal about the fact that it isn't about white people.
Yes, that's exactly what is really, really good about it and what it gets right. And it's like, you know, there are bits that are about them being Asian. There are things with their parents and Asian cuisine and little jokes about it and stuff, but it's not the point of the film. And that's the point that I think we're trying to get to in social justice warrior terms, aren't we? Where you can have representation of people, you know, have characters who are of any race or any gender or whatever, or who are differently abled than other people. And it's not a thing, you know, it affects their character because it is a character trait, but it's not a thing. And this is the kind of film that's on that journey, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I love the fact that, you know, it doesn't, that's not the defining characteristic of this movie. The defining characteristic of this movie is that it's a funny rom-com about two childhood friends who both crushed on each other and who then refine themselves and at the same time change the kind of people that they were turning into. And it's a well-crafted story like that.
And it is. One of whom writes a song about a tennis ball.
Yes. But it's just nice to see all of that without it being caught up in, but it's about Asian people. Look at the Asian people.
Yeah.
This is all massive focus of it. It's just nice to have a film like that.
Called Crazy Non-Rich Asians. Although I did enjoy that film as well. For different reasons.
I still haven't seen it, but I've heard it is really good.
Oh, we should talk about it at some point.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just nice to have that. Anyway, having said that, let's move on and actually talk about the movie. Because it is funny, and there's funny moments. I wouldn't say that it's up there with some of the best recent rom-coms that I've seen.
I say that I really enjoyed it, and I did, but because I think I actually went into it with relatively low expectations, but not like low expectations. I went into it thinking it would be good, but I wasn't necessarily like, oh, I'm really into X actor or the idea of or the concept or whatever. Although I think Ali Wong is very funny. We watched both of her stand-up specials and those were really good. One of which she did while she's pregnant and she's like striding around the stage and she's pregnant and furious. And we watched that while Claire was pregnant and that was very enjoyable. So I knew her and I knew Randall. I'd seen Randall Park in a couple of other things, but I wasn't like, oh, I have to go watch this movie. I was just like, it was kind of there. And I was like, oh, this will be a fun rom-com. Stick on a Sunday. It'll be enjoyable. It'll pass the time. But there were things that tipped it over into being really good. So I think because I was pleasantly surprised by it, maybe I'm now thinking it's better than it is.
Yeah, whereas I went into it having seen a little bit of buzz around it. It got decent reviews. And the internet...
I don't read reviews.
The internet seems to have been a big fan of it. But I didn't go into it with super high expectations. And I think it kind of just met the expectations that I was hoping for, which was, it's all right. It's pretty good. There's some really funny moments. I was aware of Randall Park. I'd seen Randall Park in other things. I knew the name Ali Wong, but I'd not seen her in anything, I don't think. And then I knew Daniel Day Kim as well. And obviously Keanu Reeves. So I didn't go into it really know it. I didn't go into it super knowing anybody and being excited about seeing some performances, but it had names in it that I recognised and that I'd liked from other stuff, and Ali Wong I'd heard good things about. So I think it's a very competently made film. There's a few weird moments here and there where they clearly had to overdub bits. I don't know if you noticed.
I actually did not, to be honest. So fill me in.
So there's just these bits and pieces here and there where it's clear that they put in the lines in post-production, which does look a bit goofy and it makes it feel a little bit dated because, you know, these days generally that doesn't happen.
I honestly didn't notice, but I'm also only ever half paying attention to anything these days because there's usually a baby in the room.
And
if he's,
exactly.
If he's not, even if he's asleep, you can't quite relax because at any moment he could wake up and look at you, or maybe even cry.
At any moment, he might just turn to you and just like set you on fire with his mind.
Yeah, he might turn around and be like, "Chaos reigns."
It's the most challenging thing about being a new parent. People say about, you know, disruptions to sleep patterns and everything like that. No, it's the fire. It's the mind fire.
Nah, it's the kinetic powers, because they grow out of it eventually. But
yeah,
you know,
kinetic powers are the mind killer.
Yeah, you should have seen. We had a barbecue with everyone from our NCT group on Saturday. It was a bloodbath.
Literally, he was just you know, flipping the burgers.
Yeah, and then flipping the bird with his mind.
With his mind, which means that he was making other people flip the bird at you.
Yep,
that's
everyone was doing it.
Yeah, just absolute.
Everyone's heard about the bird. The bird, bird, bird. The bird is the word.
So
I'm a terrible person.
Anyway, so this movie, you've got the traditional movie roles. You've got slacker guy and you've got ambitious woman, right?
Which is shown by, well, it starts with them as children, which I quite like. I always like a bit of a cross-decade narrative. It can end up being a bit schmaltzy and a bit kind of, oh, everything is tied back to when we were kids and where. But actually, I thought it was really well done. It gave you just enough of them as kids, including her being a really big fan of his mum, and his mum showing her how to cook and stuff. And then she dies, and then they have awkward sex as teens, and then that's it. And then it skips forward, and they like haven't seen each other in ages. And the first scene of the present day narrative is his dad walks into his room. What are you doing? He goes, "I'm smoking weed and dancing in the mirror." And you expect the dad to be like, "Oh, all pissed off," but the dad's like, "Oh, okay, let's dance." And the dad's yeah. like supportive of his band and stuff, and they run this air conditioning business together, and it's actually quite tender.
Yeah, they get the family relationships really great in this movie, don't they? It really reminds me of some of the best motivational dads in rom-com cinema. where
there is an emotional dad speech.
There is an emotional dad speech,
which is our favorite film trope.
That is our favorite film trope. Tick the box for emotional dad speech.
We're going to do a spin-off from our four Big Boys Don't Cry cinematic universe films, the BBDCU films one, which is just like an hour of juggalos doing emotional dad speeches dead, like straight to the camera, like dead serious.
While you've got a slow piano cover of Insane Clown Posse songs in the background, yeah. Like in the John Lewis adverts.
Yeah. being sung by a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah. Fucking magnets, how do they work?
Who's putting on that voice that's like this?
By the way, I think I've shown you it outside of the podcast, but are you aware of the YouTube channel of the guy who turns major songs into minor key and minor key songs into major key?
This sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, because I was catching up on a few missed ones, and Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith. In a minor key is the best James Bond song you've ever heard in your life. It's actually incredible.
You know, I would love to write a James Bond theme. It's like, it's all you have to do is take a just kind of regular pop song and take it 1,000 times more seriously than you ordinarily would, and there's your song.
Yeah, and that's what makes them so good, is they're just so bombastic and over the top. Another great one is Stay With Me by Sam Smith in a minor key is actually really, really cool, and I would listen to it all the time. So sometimes they come across ones that really work well. Other times they're very, very funny, like the X-Files in major key. or Skyfall in a major key is great.
You know, what the best Bond theme is?
What is the best Bond theme?
It's that one by Chris Cornell for Casino Royale.
That is a really good song.
That is extremely good.
That is a super great track.
I genuinely think it's underrated.
Also, did you ever hear the Radiohead song for Spectre, which did not get chosen because they chose the Sam Smith song?
Are you genuinely asking me if I've voluntarily listened to a Radiohead song?
And I know you love Push Pull Revolving Doors, the classic of whenever the fuck that was released. It's a really interesting song, actually, because it is kind of Radiohead.
Interesting. I can hear the quotes around the word interesting. That's what they say about Radiohead. Oh, they're so interesting.
Well, it is fascinating because it's a modern Radiohead song. So imagine lots of weird drums and strange stuff going on.
As opposed to a Renaissance Radiohead song.
Exactly. It's just Tom York in a big fuck off wig.
With a ruff.
It's... so it has all of the atonal stuff that you despise about Radiohead.
Oh, good.
But then there's the bombastic Bond dynamic that just randomly pops up here and there, and it actually does sound pretty cool. It doesn't fit with a Bond movie ever, so I can understand why they didn't go for it, but it was interesting nonetheless. And it's like, fair play, Radiohead, that is an interesting take you've made.
Okay, I'd be willing to give it a go.
I think you would hate it. I'm not gonna lie.
Well, now I have to listen to it.
I think you should listen to it, but I do think there's a 99.95% chance that you will despise it.
All right, 0.05% chance. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see.
But yes, go listen to Oleg Berg on YouTube, everybody, because you need to listen to the minor key version of Don't Want to Miss a Thing. It's awesome.
That does sound very good.
But speaking of good music, I liked Yellow Peril or Hello Peril.
No, Hello Peril.
Hello Peril.
That's the joke.
Playing on the term Yellow Peril, which is super racist nonsense that was around in the... Where did that come around? Was that...
That sounds like some Winston Churchill wartime shit.
Yeah. It feels like something that was around pre-McCarthy racist nonsense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yellow Peril is a racist colour metaphor that is integral to the xenophobic aspect of colonialism. Yeah, that sounds... Yep. as imagined in the racialist book The Rising Tide of Color Against White World Supremacy 1920 by Lothrop Stoddard. What a name.
That well, that sounds like...
Well, fuck you, Lothrop Stoddard, you old racist.
I was going to say, if you were going to name an old... if you were going to name a white supremacist, Lothrop... I mean, that's pretty much... Lothrop Stoddard is like the number one name, isn't it?
Yep, for sure. Nigel Farage has got a picture of him up on his wall.
Oh, wow. He created a map of the primary races of the world, which I will not name because they're quite racist in themselves.
That sounds extremely bad.
Yeah, this guy is something else. I mean, this guy sounds racist by 1920 standards, which is quite something. Because, you know, there are people where they say, oh, it was just like that at the time. And actually, no, it fucking wasn't. Like, people try and play off... who's the horror writer who was insanely racist? Who did Cthulhu?
H.P. Lovecraft.
H.P. Lovecraft, super massive racist. He was super massive racist for the time period in which he was writing. So much so that people were reading it and going, oh, that's a bit racist. Winston Churchill, massively racist for the time period in which he was prime minister and for the time period in which he was in government before he was prime minister. At the time, criticized for being massively racist. You know, some of these things are not just because of their time period. Some of the time, people are just massive fucking racists, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like just because things were overall more racist in 1920 or whatever, it doesn't mean that like it's like people couldn't have been racist in those times.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, oh, it's so stupid. So, in that context racist. Of it being like a really like racist. Thing to reference the Yellow Peril, it's kind of like, is that actually like an overly edgy band name, Hello Peril? But it sort of makes it cheeky, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a cheeky band name, yeah. That I'm super down with.
And then when you see them, you're like, oh, okay, that suits them, because they've got a guy rapping and playing the electric piano, which I love. I think yes. We need more bands like that.
I think we do, and also they're really good. And I didn't realize that what's his face? Randall Park was in a hip hop band.
Oh, he actually is?
Yeah, called Ill Again.
Oh, that's cool. I did not know that.
And so the music in the movie was doing stuff with Dan the Automator, who's a really great producer. I don't know if you know any of Dan the Automator's work.
I know the name.
But he's worked with everybody in the industry, basically. So he's done a lot of stuff with like DJ Shadow, for instance, or he was a key component in getting Gorillaz off the ground as well, working on their early albums. Also worked with Mike Patton, who we all love.
Oh, yeah.
And people like Primal Scream and stuff like that. So primarily does a lot of work with like the hip hop sphere, but that experience in hip hop. Then follows over for bands that want that kind of hip hop edge in their music. So yeah, he's a genius, is Dan the Automator. And apparently he was involved in getting the music for Always Be My Maybe, which is great.
That's really cool.
Yes, yeah, which is awesome. And I think, you know, that's part of the reason why they sound so cool. And I would totally listen to Hello Peril.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking that. Like, this is genuinely a band that I would listen to, but also the kind of band that we would end up playing with and actually liking. And one of those like serendipitous, enjoyable nights.
Yeah, they'd be one of those bands that we stayed in touch with and played more gigs with, which is cool.
Bounce back like a tennis ball. Really, any kind of ball except a football. I love that.
It was really great, and I thought the end credits music, the Keanu Reeves song,
yeah,
was great as well. So yeah, if you do have a full EP of Hello Peril songs, guys, release it.
Yep, give it to us and let us play a show with you.
Yeah, let's go play.
Yeah, So that's that side of it was good. It's the thing with these kind of films that elevate them from just being, as you say, Sunday afternoon fluff to actually being really enjoyable. It's the attention to those kind of little details and the things where the two leads are involved in the writing, so they're putting a lot of themselves into it, but it's not ending up being self-indulgent. Like they've been able to see it as characters and not just kind of playing themselves.
Yeah, and that's really good, isn't it? It feels very authentic, which is nice.
Yeah, it definitely felt very, very real, actually. But still had a lot of very, very funny lines in there as well.
Oh, yeah, this movie is I wouldn't say it hits it home every time. There's definite bits which are funnier than others, but there are some really funny bits.
I like when she describes him as a stealth asshole.
Yep, and I like when he has his butt out on stage and is peeing into an amplifier.
Yeah, you just suddenly see his butt. I'm going to try that the next time we have a show.
Please don't.
And then, yeah, that's the only bit that was unrealistic for me, because he was like, oh, that same venue invited us back and gave us another chance. It's like, if you peed on an amp and there's sparks going everywhere and the whole audience can see your ass, you are getting banned from that club, my friend. And potentially arrested.
Yes, yeah. But there are some great lines as well. One that really I loved was Keanu Reeves. Shout out to Keanu Reeves in this movie. I was kind of...
And in general.
But I was kind of umming and ahhing over this movie until he turned up. And suddenly it was just like, okay, I can see where this movie's going with these scenes. Let's just let this chaos ensue for however long he's in this movie and just embrace it. Because he just immediately throws this energy into the movie.
He comes into that song. What is that song? And it's just like, yeah, the music's really well mixed.
Yeah, it works great. But he says this line, which I think is going to stick with me for the rest of my life. The man who embraces his mediocre nothingness shines greater than any. It's just like, that is glorious.
Yeah, but what's so good about that is that you know that if you're in a room with Keanu Reeves and he said that, you'd be like, right on, Keanu, that is so profound. Because it's Keanu Reeves.
Yes.
And that works because he's totally aware of it. Yeah.
He's because I think Keanu Reeves, like, he's one of those people that's great at being self-aware, but also he's able to pull out those performances that surprise you. And so, like, you know, you've got these movies where he's sort of doing things that expected of him. So, like, the John Wick movies, for instance, are really great.
Which I've not seen.
You've not seen those.
I've not seen any of them. Isn't it about a man taking revenge on someone who kills his dog?
That's the first one. But it's more that they do a lot of great world building, which is why people keep going back to them. It's not necessarily a straightforward film. They're really artful in the way that they build the world around the characters, which I think is why people have sort of stuck with them so much. But also they're very, very well-crafted action movies with, you know, physical, real set pieces and real action and things like that. But yeah, so things like that, you know, that's what you'd expect from him, from his wheelhouse, to do those kind of... those roles. But he does a lot of interesting stuff as well. Like, you know, he's in the Neon Demon, he's in the Bad Batch as well, which is a very interesting movie that I think was also a Netflix original. So he's done all of these. He's not afraid to test his boundaries and do other stuff, and I think this is an example of him really pulling off one of those great cameo performances, where he basically just steals the show, really. And that's not a slight on the other people in the movie, because they're all very, very good, but he just comes in.
But they're not Keanu Reeves.
He just comes in and he breathes this life into this with this eccentric, wonderful, hilarious performance.
Sorry, I'm on his Wikipedia page. It says here, an avid motorcyclist, Reeves co-founded Arch Motorcycle Company, which sells and builds custom motorcycles.
I mean, that's very cool.
It just gets better. And then there's a picture of him signing an autograph with his left hand, that's under which the caption is, Keanu Reeves is left-handed.
Oh, that's good to know.
Thank you.
That's really good to know. Thank you for letting us know that. Keanu Reeves also knows the pain of trying to find a good left-handed guitar.
Yeah. Jeez. Oh, yeah, because he's a he plays bass, or played bass in the band Dogstar.
Yes. They were like a grunge band, weren't they, or something like that?
Yeah. It says here about Dogstar, they had a surprising origin story, which is... Where is it? It's something to do with hockey. Ah, I can't find it. Never mind. It was basically he had a chance encounter with the other guy in the band in a shop where they were both wearing the same hockey jersey or something.
Oh, okay.
Was Keanu loves hockey because he's Canadian?
Yes, because it's compulsory in Canada, isn't it, to love to love hockey?
Yeah. So yeah, so Keanu in this was just brilliant, but also they didn't overdo it either. They didn't overuse him, which is tempting when you've got someone in a film who's agreed to sort of goof around and play themselves and have this part in the film to overdo it. But really, he's only in it for about, what, 10 minutes?
Yeah, yeah, it is only about 15 minutes, but it is very, very funny.
Yeah, it's very, very funny, but at the same time, it is kind of real because it's like, if you were out to dinner with the girl you fancied and she was with Keanu Reeves, you would be a dick to Keanu Reeves, wouldn't you? And you'd punch him. And you had to go back to his hotel room where he's weirdly listening to Man in the Box by Alice in Chains. And then, like, which is a great song. And then asks you to play a truth or dare game.
Yep, it's awesome. And again, it's just this bizarre little deviation that kind of takes the movie out of its comfort zone and puts it somewhere else to great effect. And I like it when movies do that. And sometimes they feel a bit ham-fisted and a bit corny, but here it works really well.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, he's being all transcendent and all Keanu, but Marcus does eventually get to him, and that's really good as well.
Yes, yeah. The sort of facade, the veneer peels off a little bit, doesn't it? And you see what's underneath, and it's, yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. And then he smashes a vase on his head, because that's what Keanu do.
That's what he does. So what else? What else do we say about this film?
I think it's interesting how she's this really big successful person, and it's not like he's not a successful person, but it has an interesting take on celebrity as well. I think, you know, where she's like famous, but she's not made out that like she's not made out that like she can't go anywhere, but it's like he sort of like they sort of muddle along, and he thinks she's like a bit pretentious and this, that, and whatever, and she thinks he's a slacker, but all of that really just ends up becoming sort of part of their relationship in a nice way. It didn't try too hard to make any kind of big statement about celebrity, but I thought that was an interesting and fun element of it that made their relationship more interesting and not just like, oh, he likes this, she likes this, or that, like, it meant that the tension between them felt real and not manufactured, when it has to be the they break up so that they can get back together bit in romantic comedies. So often it's manufactured. It didn't feel that way in this.
Yeah, I agree. I think the way that they often you'll have movies that frame the they're a celebrity, the other person isn't a celebrity, how are they going to do it? Like Notting Hill, for instance.
Sensations.
Or the prime example being Notting Hill, where it's much more heavy-handed. Whereas here it feels like two human beings, which is really nice. And you get both of their
sides. And he doesn't have
Reese
Ifans in his pants in every scene.
No.
So that helps.
Whereas yeah, here you can kind of see both sides of it, and you recognize the difficulties and the limitations a lot more, rather than one person being more of a sort of stand-in for that celebrity status, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure. And they use it to make some funny lines. Like, he says, I once saw Glenn Close order a pineapple sandwich. And I can't remember the context of that one, but that one made me laugh.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you catch the end of a conversation with them. And he goes, oh, she really said that? And she says, yeah, just because somebody plays a singing teapot in a Disney movie doesn't mean they're always nice. The bit that really made me chuckle was when... So there's a kind of running joke or motif about Marcus never dressing right for the thing that he's going to, which is really like a subtle but well done thing. Like when they go out with Keanu, he's wearing like the tux that he wore to prom, And he's like, oh, you told me this was a high-end place. And then she's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's fashionable. It's not fashionable to dress like that. And then when it's like a posh event, he's in just like a T-shirt and jeans and like he's underdressed. And he has to go to the, a jacket is required. So he has to go to like the cloakroom and get a jacket. And it's like way too big for him. And he's like, he's sassing the cloakroom guy. He's being really serious about it. And he's like, oh, yeah, what? I can't have any of those. No, only this one is spelled. He's like, yeah, did someone die in it? And he's like, a gentleman died, sir.
Yes.
Really serious. And then he's who died? Andre the Giant.
Yeah, that whole back and forth really made me laugh as well. It was really well done.
You can imagine what that jacket smelled like.
Oh, I know, right?
No disrespect to Andre the Giant, but he was a sweaty man.
But just, yeah, a leftover jacket in a cloakroom is, yeah, is not going to be nice, is it?
No, but at least it was an option.
Yes, yeah. But yeah, so I liked the way that they framed that. I like the way that they framed them as two very different people. And the way that they changed didn't feel too forced. I think it felt a little bit forced. And it felt a little bit,
yeah.
But overall, I think they handled that balance quite well.
Yeah, for sure, because neither of them, like, at the end, he's got this whole thing about her restaurant's being pretentious or whatever, and then at the end they go into her new restaurant, and obviously it's kind of unpretentious, which you're really expecting, and it's authentic, because he has a go at her about making inauthentic Asian food. But that still doesn't become the whole point of the film, but it's good that it's there as a point of tension between them. But yeah, they go into a new restaurant at the end and it's not pretentious and it's kind of simple. But again, it doesn't overdo it too much. It still looks nice.
Yes, yeah. It's not sort of like, hey, I made a diner, you know?
Yeah.
Which is what they could have done. But yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah, so I like that. And also, I want to get our band name on tennis balls.
Oh, it's such a great idea, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And then you can throw them into the crowd. Anything you can throw into the crowd is good. I think that's the reason that we haven't been successful this far as a band, is we haven't thrown enough things into the crowd.
Yeah, that's a good idea. We just need to start hurling objects at people.
Yeah, for sure. And the drummer in Hello Peril was played by Charlene Yee, who I like very much. She's in all sorts of things and seems to have just kind of small parts in all sorts of things. But she wrote this interesting film called Paper Heart with Michael Cera that she starred in as well in 2009. And I quite liked that. We should talk about that at some point.
Yeah, I don't know that, but yeah, good to have a look at it.
Yeah, so she was cool and a good drummer.
Yes.
She was really drumming.
Yeah, it's genuine musicians, isn't it?
Yeah, real people.
Which is great. Real people doing the music.
Yeah.
But yeah, which is awesome.
I always like that. So yeah, apart from the overdubs being like Tommy Wiseau in the room, all good.
Yeah, apart from that. It feels very well made, a well crafted, solid rom-com.
Yeah.
Not necessarily going to change your life, but it's got some really good moments in it.
No, I'm not going to like rush to watch it again. Maybe in a few years it'll come up. You'll be like, oh yeah, that was good. Let's pass the time. But yeah, it's good. Solid. Definitely solid.
Yeah.
Do me a solid movie.
So have you got any more to add, or shall we head on to the rating?
No, I don't think we have. Is there trivia?
So a bit of trivia for you. When Keanu Reeves might not have been available to do the movie, they had a look at various other people, including M. Night Shyamalan.
What?
They were thankfully able to get Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, because like the role of that person is just there to create, to spark jealousy between them and for it to be funny that they're there, right? So really it could have been anyone, but like now that you've seen it with Keanu, it's hard to imagine it being anyone else.
Exactly. And they wanted it to be sort of like this great Asian American, or, you know, Asian Canadian in Keanu's case.
Yeah.
Sort of icon. And, you know, Keanu fits the bill perfectly.
They always could have got Rob Schneider
for God's sake.
To pretend to be Asian, as he loves to do, extremely racistly.
He does enjoy being racist. You know, he also,
He said that in such a dry way. Oh, he does enjoy being racist.
I mean, you could. There's a few people you could go for. You could also go for Mickey Rooney, of course.
Oh, geez, yeah. Isn't he dead? It could from beyond the grave.
They can hologram anybody in, can't they?
Oh, God, yeah, holograms. Jeez. They can get all the big racists from history. Get Churchill in there. Why not? They're like, oh my God, my ex-girlfriend's dating Winston Churchill. I can't believe it.
He's just there talking about finest hours over dinner.
And they go, oh, Churchill, who was your childhood crush? And then he's like, it was my bulldog.
Oh, for God's sake. Someone's gonna take great offence to that comment.
What, that Churchill fucked his bulldog?
Yes.
He definitely did. That's the reason that bulldogs are famous and that people think of the British bulldog. It's because of Churchill.
He was actually saying, I will fuck them on the beaches.
Yeah, because all the recordings from that time are so like grainy. People just hear what they want to hear, don't
exactly.
they? But we know the truth.
Yeah.
We know.
We've spoken to his hologram. We know the truth.
We've called him up from beyond the grave. Once we were done chatting to Mickey Rooney.
So yeah, that I don't know if there's more trivia, but I think the Winston Churchill revelations we've uncovered here, that's more than enough.
That's enough trivia for one night.
Yeah, for sure. So how are we gonna rate this bad boy?
Let's see. How many times do you, when you're down and you get back up again, you're never going to keep me down. How many times do you bounce back like a tennis ball?
How many times do I bounce back like a tennis ball?
Really, any kind of ball except a football.
I'm going to bounce 13 times, but then unfortunately the last time I tried to bounce a football and it did not bounce back because they are shaped like an egg.
Yeah, a hand egg. You haven't got very good hand-egg coordination.
I do not.
Cool. Well, I'm going to go higher. I'm going to go 16. I think.
Oh,
that,
wow.
That reflects the fact that I was really pleasantly surprised by it, that it really surpassed all my expectations. And my expectations going into it were that it would be good. I think it's just... And it's largely because of Keanu. I think if it didn't have the Keanu bit at all, it'd be maybe more of 14, 15, maybe... Yeah, 15, scraping 15... But yeah, Keanu can basically elevate any film up 1 to 2 points simply by being there.
Just by existing and being fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah, 16 for sure.
Very nice.
Always Be My Maybe. Good film on Netflix. Go watch it.
Yeah, go get on board.
There are much worse ways you could be spending your time.
Yeah, exactly.
Also on Netflix, New Stranger Things. I haven't watched any of it yet because I have a baby. Have you?
I have watched some of it.
I've been generally hearing good things, but trying to avoid spoilers. For the first time ever in my life, and I'm trying to avoid spoilers for a popular thing. Usually I don't care, but it's like, and everyone's like, oh, no spoilers in Avengers. I was like, oh, did you hear that in the Avengers, the spaceship, stop, spoilers, which is what most of the internet's like. Now I'm on the other side of it. It feels very strange.
Okay.
So
it's weird,
anything.
Isn't it? I'm afraid to tell you that that Darth Vader is 11.
No, Finn Wolfhard loses an arm in a bar fight. Oh no.
Yeah,
is it good though?
So it's far. Good. Yeah, it's if you liked other Stranger Things. It's more of
really
exactly
did.
The same stuff that you liked. So,
which is
good.
Exactly what I was expecting and nothing
yeah.
more.
Yeah,
so great.
People put too much on movies and TV shows to like change their lives and be these transformative experiences when sometimes just embrace a good story, you know?
Yeah, for sure. There's no need to make a big deal out of it. Stranger
exactly.
Things. Is good.
It is good.
Good times. Well, so, then, what are we watching next? What rubbish have you chosen? Well, incidentally, I spoke to my colleague Paul today about Beastly, and he's like, wow, I've found someone else who's seen the film Beastly.
I'm glad.
And we talked about how bad it was. Something about how it's like the passing of time and how we're all inching closer to the grave and whatever.
I'm glad that something I was along able those to lines. Allow you to waste 1.5 hours of your life watching it. So it's funny that you brought up Stranger Things, because I thought we would do something vaguely Stranger Things related. We're going to be watching a Winona Ryder classic. We're going to be watching Heathers.
Ah, okay. I think I have seen it, but a long time ago. I can't remember much about it.
Yeah, so it's good. I seem to remember it being good. So...
And it's one of those films that has that real cult status, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, indeed. So we'll be watching that. A couple of things before we go, however. Everybody who's listening to this should go and buy the charity album that we are part of.
I was going to say, do you want to plug that? So yes, plug it.
Yes, I do want to plug it. Hello, dear listeners. This is the commercial hour of the podcast.
Sponsored by Winston Churchill.
Sponsored by Winston Churchill and how much he loves dogs. So we're taking part in
Is it raising money for the Dogs Trust?
So we're doing this charity album. We are on it. So Paddy and I are on it. I'm also on it in a solo song that Paddy kindly created. So
which one?
So Crutches is on there.
Nice.
And then Find Your Love by Palomino Club. So you have got classic 80s pop tune and some nice acoustic-y loveliness on there from your favourite big boys. There's no limit on how much you can donate. Simply go to the link, which will be included on this page. We're raising money for Mental Health UK, so it's this amazing cause. The money being raised is going towards helping kids with their mental health and mental well-being. So it is supporting like children and young adults to get the support they need earlier on in life to help them sort of build a good life for themselves beyond an area where there's very little support for people and people don't know where to go. So it's really important to support people at that time. And so, yeah, go and do it. There's a Just Giving link. What you want to do is you want to go on, you want to donate however much you want, but you get 12 songs for that. 12 awesome songs.
12 whole songs.
12
whole
songs.
Not bits of songs.
No, you don't get just 5-second snippets here. You get whole songs. So just donate whatever you want to Just Giving, and then the people that have set it up will then send you on the download link where you can get all of the lovely material.
Which is great. So it's for a great cause as well. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yes,
obviously. So wherever you're getting this this podcast, you'll be able to find notes with it, with links to some of the rubbish we've talked about, and also a very, very good charity album. So
yes, so please get involved, everybody.
Yeah, be good.
Yes,
do
be
a
good.
Do a good thing,
and do that good thing well.
Yeah, do good things and do them well. That is how to live life, my friend.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was it from me.
That's good night from him, and it's good night from me. And oh no, wait, you're supposed to say it's good night from me.
I am. God
damn it. named my son after Eric Morecambe, and I can't even rip off his lines correctly. No, I didn't name him after Eric Morecambe.
It's good that there are lots of
Erics and they're all good.
They are, actually. Can't think of a bad Eric.
We genuinely did have this discussion. Apart from Eric Trump. Which is not that famous. He's not the one who looks like he was the most going through a divorce man ever, which is Donald Trump Jr. But yeah, Eric Trump is not good.
No.
But every other Eric is good, though.
Yeah, so
I stand by my choice.
I can't think of any truly heinous Erics.
No. Anyway, enough about that.
Yes.
I'm a parent and I'm tired and delirious, which is why I'm just talking complete nonsense. And this is how the podcast is going to go now. So there it is.
There we go.
But yeah, hope you enjoyed Always Be My Maybe. It's a very, very good film, and I hope you go watch it and enjoy it. Thanks as always for tuning in. We really, really appreciate it, and hope you enjoyed us talking about it. Hope you like what we do. If you do, leave us a rating or a review or whatever, wherever you get your podcasts. Helps other people to find the show. And you can always get in touch with us on the emails, bigboysdontcrypodcast@gmail.com, and on Twitter @bigboysdontpod.
Yes, let us know. Who would always be your maybe?
Ah, yes.
What kind of ball would you like to bounce?
Yeah. You can choose any kind of ball except a football.
Obviously.
If you choose a football, we'll block you.
Yep. Instant block. Insta-mute. Yep. Anyway, that's it for us.
Bye.
Bye-bye.